My name is Jamie Hill. I'm the Design and Communications Manager at Embark Sustainability. I think my favorite thing about Embark is that you do not have to be the climate know-it-all. You don't have to know everything about the issues that are going on. You really just need the passion to get started. So depending on what you're interested in, you might have a unique skill or interest that you don't think is applicable to climate at all, and it turns out you are the people that we need to be part of the community. So I'd really encourage anybody who has even an inkling of interest in climate or food justice to get on board. Embark Sustainability Society is an independent, student-centered nonprofit working across SFU campuses. Embark focuses on climate and food justice in their programs and initiatives. Some of their ongoing work includes their food rescue program, learning gardens, and sustainability career nights. Discover your role in building a sustainable future based on your unique skills and interests. Learn more at embarksustainability.org and follow along on Instagram at embarksustain.
And welcome back to Intravenous here on Campus Community Radio, CJSF 90.1 FM. I am Robin, and I am your host for today's program. If you've been with me since the top of the show, you'll know that I was hoping to be joined in studio by Rebecca, and we would have a conversation today, but unfortunately something came up and she was unable to be here. We had thought, in light of Monday being the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation in Canada, that we would tackle the topic of truth and how truth is flexible, even though it's not supposed to be flexible. Or that we're kind of led to believe that, you know, it's very singular, but it isn't singular. It's very personal, and it is, as I was talking about in the earlier part of the show, it really revolves around what we believe, what we understand propositions to be, you know, how we understand the ways that it correlates to facts, and you know, whether there's a coherence between the belief that something is true and the system of beliefs that believe that something is true. And so that there's a lot of nuance, I guess, between, you know, this idea that, you know, truth is a singular point. It is not a singular point. And this is where it gets problematized, because what we live with in the West, in this culture of colonization and very much white supremacy, is this belief structure and this systemic approach where the truth stems from this belief that the white man, especially, is superior to others and therefore should have more control over other races and genders, right? And especially because, you know, when we talk about white men, we're talking about white, cis, hetero, normative culture, right? It's very pointed. It's very specific. And so that becomes the rubric or the matrix that all truth is designed to support, and the measure by which we determine what is true and what is not true. And, you know, this is why it's so difficult to, you know, hear the truths of other folks, right? When we have this infrastructure of white supremacy in the West, creating, you know, the patriarchal overculture and this what's known as the concrete ceiling phenomenon, where, you know, you can only go so far. There's only so much leverage that that one can get. There are race and gender pay gaps. There's, you know, representation or lack of representation in the media. There's, you know, all of these examples where we don't actually see a true picture and understand a true picture of our community in some cases. It results in the marginalization, oppression, traumatization of not only Indigenous groups across the country, but, you know, differently gendered folks and, you know, people who come from other countries, where they stand out as being different or othered in relation to white culture, right? And this is a global phenomenon from European imperialist powers. It's led to the underrepresentation of these groups in the media as heroes in movies, books, shows, and politicians tend to be white men. There's a lack of representation across women and Indigenous people, and Indigenous women, as well as other brown and black women, are often sexualized instead of empowered. And so when we are talking about the ways in which, you know, this National Day of Truth and Reconciliation in Canada is being, I don't know, explored isn't the right word, but, you know, handled? That's not the right word either, but you know maybe what I mean. Approached. Honestly, how can we fully achieve this goal of truth and reconciliation when Canada is still in such a colonial system and the sort of overlording overculture talks out one side of its mouth about how important it is to, you know, understand the truth and have the truth and know the truth, and also support industries that take over northern land and extract and remove Indigenous people from it, for instance. You know, a lot of what our culture is dependent upon remains embedded in legal, political, and economic context that is, again, situated from and within the lens of this white culture. And so laws and policies are developed to justify claiming territory that is already occupied. We talk a lot about being on stolen land, you know, as of recently, however recently that is, in your world. But, you know, this reality that, you know, there's an idea that there's some kind of nugget of truth that allows for a certain portion of the world's population to think it's a good idea to just, you know, go in and land, colonize, take up space, move people out of their rightful place, and carry on. These legal and moral concepts are not simply artifacts of colonial history, but still serve as the foundation of land claims that are argued in court today. And so, you know, just like I said in the beginning, where, you know, yes, the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation is about, you know, honoring the stories of residential school survivors, we still see this phenomenon of removing Indigenous children from their homes and making them wards of the state through the foster care system and through child welfare, based on what we consider a truth, based on a colonialist mindset, right? One of the biggest, I guess, flags, you know, there's, we've talked a lot about consent on this show the last few shows, and, you know, in consent language, there's green flags and red flags. And if you have a lot of green flags, then, you know, you go ahead. And if there's red flags, then, you know, you don't go ahead. And if there's a lot of red flags, obviously you stop. But, you know, it's pause for negotiation, right? When there's these red flags. And the fact that the Indian Act is still being named the Indian Act and not being officially changed, while aiming for truth and reconciliation, is a bit of a red flag. Maybe a lot of red flag, an entire red flag. And the unwillingness, I guess, of the government to get in there and modify what that looks like in terms of a how that relationship of, you know, the Indigenous people being all wards of the state under the Indian Act is a truth that is difficult to reconcile with. And when people are underrepresented in Canadian politics, which is, you know, kind of the road into how things get changed, and we saw this and we see this, you know, play out quite a bit, where good people in politics, Indigenous women in politics, resign because of abuse, because their truth is not being listened to and considered in the ways that they are expressing it, you know? And that what does Rebecca call it again? The concrete ceiling phenomenon, right? that, you know, you can talk and talk and talk, and it just butts up against this brick wall, and it doesn't move anywhere, you know? That truth just gets stuck in the back of your throat, and really can, I don't know, I think it can start to really create doubts about how we understand what we know to be true for ourselves, right? We start to really think maybe that we're crazy, and that it is this ultimate gaslighting of, but on a societal level, it's gigantic. I want to play another song here, but first I want to just draw your attention to this book that I have been reading. It's called Imagination, a Manifesto by Ruha Benjamin, and it has to do not necessarily with truth telling so much as, you know, what we're able to imagine. And she breaks it down into these two words, or these two concepts, imagination and imaginaries. Conceptually, they're kin, so they're related, but they're not identical. And that was sort of interesting to me. And, you know, when we're talking about, you know, these concepts of truth and what's true and what's false, it's interesting to think about these concepts, because imaginaries refer to collective projections of a desirable or feasible future or truth. And so when we imagine things based on truth that is very singular and white supremacist, for instance, then what we're imagining becomes something that is no different than it was before. And it doesn't actually get us into a place of this imagined future that can be better and bigger and bolder and more equitable and filled with a lot more social justice than we could ever imagine, because we can't get our headspace out of thinking in a particular way. That's the difference between imagining and imaginaries. And with that, I'm going to leave you with, or not leave you, but I'm going to come back. We're going to hear Clara Sophia and Echoes of Truth here on Intravenous. Clara Sophia with Echoes of Truth here on Intravenous. I'm Robin, and just in the last few minutes of the program today, talking about truth in light of Monday, September 30th, the National Day of Truth and Reconciliation in Canada. What can we do What can we do when we're still living in a colonial system? Well, one of the ways is to educate yourself. You know, read books by Indigenous people, by authors who are Black and brown and don't see the world through the same eyes as you do. I made a pledge myself a few years ago to, you know, only read authors that were, you know, of a different culture. And it really does open up your worldview when you read books, even fiction books that are written by other folks. We can call for the calls to justice to be fulfilled, and those require a decolonizing approach from the colonial system that Canada lives by. That is their purpose. We can also challenge the colonial influence by making space for Indigenous perspectives that are often cast aside. And we can recognize the inherent rights through the principle that Indigenous people have the right to govern themselves in relation to matters internal to their communities that are integral to their unique cultures, identities, traditions, languages, and institutions with respect to their special need or their special relationship to the land. I think that, you know, decolonizing ourselves and our own relationship to the land is also a part of that, and hard because we've been, you know, we've been brought up in a very manicured lawn culture. And so our relationship to the land and with the land is something that needs control, right? It's not something that we have a conversation with. We just go out there and mow it down. That's how we take care of of the land. And recognize a strength-based approach with which focuses on the resilience and expertise of individuals and communities themselves. And so, you know, these are just a few ways that we can begin to have a more reconciled future. Something where we're, you know, speaking truth to power, and you know, this comes across the spectrum of topics. And so, yeah, I'm sure there's a lot more to talk about, but that's what I have for you today. I feel out of breath. That's a lot of things. Thanks so much for keeping up with me. The audio archive will be posted up at the Intravenous link. And of course, Democracy Now! Is coming up in just a few minutes. We'll be back next week with a show on AI and gender. Again, thanks for listening. I've been Robin. This has been Intravenous.